Hey, Charlie, are you there?
I am here.
So this is a live interview, except we're just sort of having fun, the two of us. But I wanted, Charlie, let me introduce you very briefly. Charlie is, first of all, he's just a really cool guy, but he is the founder and CEO of Productive Flourishing, which is a website for planning and productivity for professional creatives. I love that word, professional creatives, entrepreneurs and small business owners. And I love the way you explain what you do. Your company helps people take meaningful action on the stuff that matters. He's a former Army logistics officer, which actually turns out to be very useful, and also did graduate studies in philosophy, also very useful for those of us who know Charlie. That's sort of very much who Charlie is. And your new book is just out, and right now it's out as an e-book, but I understand it will be available soon as a soft cover?
Yes.
Okay, and it's called The Small Business Life Cycle, A Guide for Taking the Right Steps at the Right Time to Grow Your Small Business. And I love that title. I'll ask you about that in just a sec, because it really is it's a great title. So, you know, last time we talked about the book you were working on, which was maybe a year ago, I'm trying to remember, but anyway, you said you were submitting a proposal and you were going to go with a New York publisher. What happened? What changed your mind? You went in a different direction.
Yes, I went in a different direction at a different time. And so first off, before I jump into that, thanks for having me, Debbie. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk about this stuff. So the thing about it is the book proposal is still on. And there are a few things that kind of happened. One is that I was getting a lot of requests for the material that's in the book, in this current book. And I got to it and I was like, you know what, it's taken me more time to just, you know, worry about it and think about it than it would be to go ahead and finish it up. And there's some stuff that I really wanted to say there that I had stretched out through all sorts of different things. And so, you know, the first thing about it is if you're a coach or you're a consultant, you're a teacher, you're a speaker, or you're in business, you're talking about stuff all the time and you've got your material in different different places, and just a book is a nice opportunity to be able to pull it all together and have a coherent start, middle, and end, and be able to take people on a reader's journey. So I started thinking about it, and part of the reality is that I'm still working on the book proposal. It's much more challenging for me because when you work on a book proposal for the traditional publisher, in my mind, and Debbie, your experience may have been different with this, but every time I sit down to write the proposal, there's all these other people that start coming into the room, like the acquisitions editor and the marketing director, and start thinking of the 9 sales that the book has to go through and who it needs to please. And all of a sudden, I'm writing for, like, all these different people, and I've lost the connection to my reader.
That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, and so with this book, yeah, it's largely been that it was a clear need, something I wanted to do, something that all things told the way I did it was not that extensive for me, not extensive of a project. And, you know, I'll just be completely transparent here. It also gives me a lot of confidence finishing up the proposal because I could be like exactly how I feel now. We can either partner together, this is my voice, this is how I write, this is who my people are, or we cannot, and I'm going to do it any damn way.
Well, you know, of course, what you're doing is complete proof for what I'm doing with beta authors, which I call them my beta authors, which is write a short book, get it out first as an e-book, just make it doable, get it out there, connect with your audience, see what the response is, and that doesn't preclude doing something longer later with a traditional publisher. So this makes perfect sense to me, and although I still know how much work it is, even to get the short book out. So I have a couple questions for you. Let me ask you first. You mentioned – I read the whole book, by the way, last night. It's on my Kindle.
Oh, thank you.
Loved it. And you mentioned working with an editor, and I wonder, can you give us a little bit of the backstory and how you put the book together? Because it sounds like you used an editor, maybe several editors, to help you pull together and organize material that you'd already written, as you point out, and then that might have been in a lot of different places, which is a brilliant idea to use someone to help you. But how did that work? Tell us.
Okay, so the first thing that I'm going to say is I have a love relationship with editors. And, you know, well, and the reason I say that is because a lot of authors and writers end up being real cocky and thinking, like, I don't need editing. You need editing. I'll just put it that way. You need editing, even if you're a great writer. And if you pay attention, great writers have editors. You know, the editing question is really interesting because you have developmental editors, you have line editors, you have copywriters, you have all sorts of editors that can come in and make your writing shine. So I've worked with actually Linda Dassault from Content Mastery Guide, and Linda is a ghostwriter. She's a type of ghostwriter that, like, when she talks to you, she records what you say, so on and so forth, and then polishes it in, you know, written English as opposed to spoken English. So she's not the type that you hire and she goes away and does all the writing and comes back with something. So there's a big difference in ghostwriting there. But I worked with Linda primarily because, you know, she's been reading the blog a long time. She was actually a past client as well. And so she was very familiar with my voice, the way that I thought. I knew what she did and I trusted it. So the process was I had some material that was already online, and I used that as a starter project to see what I was going to like working with her. So her first job was to pull that material together, and she did really well at that. But the second thing that I did was actually, this is going to be blasphemy, Debbie, but you're probably going to know what I'm going to say. I actually created a few presentations because I'm a native speaker and teacher about the material that I wanted to be in the book, and recorded myself giving that presentation. Had it transcribed, turned it over to Linda. Linda went through and made it, you know, took the rough and made it better, and then turned it back to me for final editing because I'm very particular about my voice. So I went through and did that, and that's actually how those processes got done. Were it not for doing that, I can tell you the book would not be alive right now.
Well, no, I'm not horrified at all. I think that's exactly the point, and the point that I try to make in, you know, working with authors is that, first of all, you know, make it doable. If it's not doable, you'll never ship. It'll never get done. And most people that have a book in them, or even a short book in them, already have tons of material, as you did. And I love the idea of giving the presentations and then having it transcribed and using that. And, I mean, I think yours, it's just a great case study for how you can use your own material sort of in different, what should we say, in different formats and put it together in a book. I mean, I think it's neat. I mean, and I'm glad you really spelled that out. The title...
Well, let me dig in just a little bit more there real quick.
Okay.
Because I only told you half the truth.
Oh.
And that's not fair.
Ooh.
The full truth is the way the book started was a presentation.
Oh, I
the
love
it. Someone asked me to come in and speak and teach about small business growth. And I had some ideas, and I was like, you know, all right, here's some trends and patterns I've been seeing and researching and documenting. But that ended up being the first presentation that I had on that. And the presentation was a total slam dunk. The content was a total slam dunk. So I started sharing it a little bit more, and it just kept landing. So what I did, because I didn't have the audio and video from that original talk, is I went back to my keynote, and I actually pulled up the keynote, and I did the same thing that I told you I did. I started giving the talk again.
Oh, to your computer, you mean?
To the computer, great. And so I started giving it again, and then that became transcribed. It sat there for a while. Then I had a member of my team that was like, Charlie, you know, you probably should do something with that. And I was like, I don't feel like doing something with it. She was like, okay, I'll do it. So she took the content and put it online. And then it got a huge response, and people started emailing me, like, we need a book of that. And that's the full story of how it goes. And over that time, because I've been teaching and speaking and sharing the material, you know, it changed form, but it started in what was native for me, which was speaking and teaching, and turned into a written and deliverable.
And you were, the fact that you were getting the feedback from the audience and from the audience, I'll call it, rather than readers, meant that you kind of knew what hit home, what touched a nerve, you know, what really worked. And I have to say, because I did Lift Off with you, which was a high point of my life, I will say. And I know that some of this was in Lift Off that you told us about. The zero phase, because I always thought that was so provocative. Instead of starting at phase one, you started phase zero, which made perfect sense, in a sense, after you explained it. So you've been testing it. And that's really important, I think, for people to understand, is that, you know, books that connect, it's because there is a connection with the audience. So you did it exactly the right way, which was road tested.
Yeah. Actually, there's another 10%. I will let you answer the next question. The reason I decided to do this book first. No, and I'm trying to be clear about this, and I've been meaning to write about this entire process, you know, but the other thing that was really important was because that material was public, I had data on keyword research, or on keywords on it, and I, you know, just accidentally discovered that that particular topic was one of the most searched topics on my blog. So I had people emailing me, I had the feedback from workshops and from coaching clients and from everyone else that I was teaching you, I had that real-time feedback. And then I had Google telling me, this book, you should write this book. People are searching for this. People want this information.
What were they searching for?
Business life cycle.
Small business life cycle?
No, they were searching for business life cycle.
Business life cycle.
And so they were searching for business life cycle, small business growth. They were just searching for different things on the website that related to that topic because I had been writing about that topic. And I could quantify that, not necessarily that I needed to. But, you know, when you've had a platform that's, you know, as old as PF is, which is young but still old, and you would think that people would be searching primarily for planning and creativity and things like that, and they do. And then when you see this one particular topic start to be as great, if not greater, than some of those, you know, I think I was clear. Yeah, I was clear in the newsletter yesterday. I've been writing a lot, and that's the other thing that you'll probably end up asking me about, Debbie, is. But what was clear is that I needed to stop thinking about what my next book should be and start listening to what, really listening to what people were asking me to write.
You should stop right there. Don't stop. But that's profound. I mean, that is profound. And I think for a lot of us who are very busy and doing a lot of thinking and a lot of teaching, that is an absolutely key point. Don't think about the next big idea or the next book. Think about what people are asking you about. You know, what is it they really want to know? What fulfills their need? So there's on that point. So tell me a little bit about the title, because I know how hard it is to choose a title. And this one, I have to say, this is a very good title. It seems just right. And I looked at it and I thought, well, he really chose those words. So it's The Small Business Life Cycle, subtitle, A Guide for Taking the Right Steps at the Right Time to Grow Your Small Business. And I will note for those listening that you say small business twice. Now tell us about that title.
Okay. Oh, Debbie, you know me well enough to know how bad I am with names, or how bad I can be with names. So I really appreciate the vote of confidence on the title. So here's another key thing that really led to this particular thing. I was watching Seth Godin talk, and I noticed, you know, I'd always wondered how he chose the title for his books. How did he do that? Because they're not always obvious. Until you hear him talk. Because each one of those books serve an anchor point. They're served for a piece of content. So he might be talking about, you know, just the dip that people go through when they do type certain things, right? Or the dip they go through when, you know, they're trying to become a linchpin, right? That's something that Seth Godin would actually say. Mm. But if you're listening in the audience, you know that he just referenced two of his books, which if you've read the books, it reinforces the message. And if you haven't read the books, you're like, I might like to know more about that. And so the title, The Small Business Life Cycle, was chosen because that's the way I talk about it. And I didn't want to come up with some name that I can't say. I didn't want to come up with some weird thing because I know that I'm going to be on a call. I know that I'm going to be on an interview and someone's going to ask me about small businesses. And, Debbie, you've heard me say this. Okay, so what you have to understand is that there's a small business life cycle here. And I would talk about it in that way. And so the more that you pick a title that reflects the way you actually talk, the easier it is for you to talk about your book without making it always be a promotional thing.
Yeah, I like that. Charlie, that is really, and I have to say my book has a very, the book I wrote that came out 7 years ago in the deep, dark history of past of social media is called The Corporate Blogging Book, which is a very unsexy title, but I actually chose it for that reason because I figured I could then talk about it because it takes 8 months to get it published after you turn it in. And I thought, well, I can talk about corporate blogging, which was the topic of the book, and I can say, well, it's about corporate blogging. So So, which is still not a great phrase, but the small that I think you again have just pointed out something that seems, in a sense, it just seems totally obvious. It's staring us in the face, but your approach was just right, I think.
And the subtitle was actually harder for me to come up with.
Well, I was going to say, I think it is. I think a lot of times it is. Just how do you? Although it is just right, and in fact, it sounds very familiar to me, as if you say that someplace in the book, or even you say it in the description of your company and you know what you do. So it feels just right. So okay. Now, quickly on the promotion side, just very quickly. I noticed that today your book was actually number one in the entrepreneurship category, above Chris Guillebeau's $100 Startup and some others, and I thought, that's pretty cool. So just very quickly, tell us a couple of your secrets and what you're doing, and is it completely exhausting, and tips for the listener on how to promote a self-published book.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty awesome to be at number one. And I've been careful on this not to be – to understand that on the one hand, it's a fleeting victory, right, because books, they don't stay on the shelf that long. At the other hand, celebrate the hell out of it, right, because you did it.
Absolutely.
Right? And so there's that duality there. And I'm going to be transparent. I don't like being surprised. That's not my way of things. I'm normally very prepared for things, especially when I get time zones correctly. When I do that conversion. But the thing about it is this was a completely accidental launch. It wasn't supposed to launch until Monday morning, the Monday morning after Easter. And part of that is the peculiarities of launching a book on Amazon. And I'm going to say something that's really obvious, but you don't get it until you do it. When you sell your book on somebody else's platform, they decide when your book is going to sell. You don't. So you can upload it, you can do all those things, but then Amazon has some approval stuff going on. But once they decide that it's ready to be sold, it's selling.
Right, exactly. So it's quicker than you thought, is what you're saying.
It's quicker than I thought, right?
Yeah.
Chris O'Byrne from eBook Editor is a wonderful ally in this. He's helped pull the book together and package it, and he's doing the design, and he's doing a lot of that. He moved faster than I thought. So the real story here, then I'll be brief, is that I was in meetings for 2 days while my book was, you know, getting ready to go on Amazon. I thought it was going to be, you know, I was like, okay, I can launch it Monday. It hit Friday. And somebody bought it and started sharing it. Like, I just bought this book. It's great. There's a review up. There's, you know, people talking about it on Twitter. And I'm coming out of a meeting, and I'm like, holy what the – right? And so I've been chasing the launch since then because there's some – again, when you launch something from your own website, you get to decide all of that stuff, exactly when it comes out, what the messaging is, what the sequence of it is, so on and so forth. You don't put it on Kindle.
Yeah,
so,
except that I think what you're saying is that there is this sort of organic piece of the launch, which is that.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, in a way, this is just really neat because it went on sale, and before you had to start promoting it and you know saying all this good stuff about your book, someone else did it for you. I mean, it's kind of
somebody
ideal.
Else did it for me, and that's what's been so amazing, and so. I have a lot to write and share about this, but I did go through that whole like creative catharsis of like, oh crap, my book is up. Is it worthy? Is it going to be people going to like it? Are they going to throw tomatoes at me? All that's part of the journey, right? But what has been so fascinating about this is, and I want to be 100% clear about this, it has been my tribe of people at PF, at Productive Flourishing, and my friends on Facebook that has made it number one. They did that before I started doing anything else.
Yeah. And also, I think, and again, for those listening, that one of the things that's really important about that is I'm just going to guess you don't actually have a million friends, like, say,
no.
Guy Kawasaki. And you don't need a million people to get your ebook to a number one status in a subcategory like entrepreneurship. Amazon has this weird algorithm where if enough people buy it at the same time, and it's like 30 or something. It's not hundreds and thousands. It shoots to the top of a category. So You are both.
Well,
welcome.
And here's the accident that I love about it, right? I'm a planner, I'm a strategist, but the accident about it was the book accidentally launched over Easter weekend, which most people would not do.
Yes. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
means that as people were buying it and celebrating it and sharing it, like I was, you know, counter-positional marketing is what it's called. But basically, because there weren't a whole bunch of other people selling their books and there were no other promotions going on and everybody else was either laying low or doing the Eastern thing, this particular book, like, managed to creep up there because, you know, everybody else was asleep at the wheel. And then once it got there, and then I started doing the promotion and marketing and things like that using my platform, then it already has some momentum behind it, which means that's why it's probably sticking there longer than I would. Let me put it this way. This has done better than I could have ever planned for it to do.
Okay, it's so exciting. When should we expect the soft cover? And how many? It seems like it's fairly short. How many pages is it? When should we expect the soft cover?
Okay, so soft cover should be available probably 2 weeks from today. And the key thing that I'm waiting on this, and this is the lesson learned, is that, like, you know, send out the copy, send out the book, and the copy of it for endorsements before you launch it. That seems to be such a noob thing, but I completely fell down on that. So I should have been talking to endorsers 2 weeks ago. Of course.
Exactly, because you wanted to put that on the cover. Or on the back.
Yeah, and so that's actually the delay right now. They're waiting on, you know, I'm waiting to get the endorsements and things like that. And so there's some peculiarities when you just have a digital book in the sense that a lot of people would still want either their hard copy or they want a PDF. And so there's some of those things you just learn on your fly, and I'm not super upset about it. But to answer your question, 10 to 14 days.
Are you using CreateSpace?
Yes.
Excellent, and it'll be a soft cover.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's absolutely the way to go, and I can't wait to see what it looks like. And how many pages is it, just for those of us interested in those of us?
I think it's going to end up being between 60 and 70 pages. It's short.
Right. For those of us in the short book club, Charlie, as I like to say, short is the new long.
Yeah.
And I think you've definitely illustrated that. Well, this is so very, very exciting to be continued, I'm sure. And I think we should stick to our resolve to keep this really short, and can't wait to hear more on your blog. Charlie, thank you so much. This is so much fun.
Thanks for having me, Debbie. Appreciate the opportunity to share and serve.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.